on 1116 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
Well, I will mention again, I'm in for Tony Shebeki this morning, because the Shebeks is up in Sydney. So Brett Phillips for this hour, before we launch into a big footy day with, of course, Finey and Coons after 10 o'clock, and then we're off to the G for Melbourne and Brisbane, heading west a little bit later on, of course, for Fremantle and Richmond, updates of St Kilda North Melbourne. So big stakes in the penultimate round of this AFL season. Great to have a man who's regularly here at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning alongside me to whip through an hour of sport, Troy Zantac.
Good to see you, BP. Fantastic to be here, and to all the listeners, a magnificent Sunday morning in Melbourne. And I tell you what, the final eight jigsaw puzzle, it's coming together now, BP.
Slowly but surely. Yeah, I mean, fantastic that it's going to go down to the wire, isn't it?
Yeah.
We think of that West Coast Adelaide game in a week's time. A few twists and turns to go.
The Saints today up against North Melbourne, there's still a chance. So the Tigers play today. Up against Fremantle over there, over at Subiaco. So some interesting games. And Melbourne need to beat the Brisbane Lions today to cement their place in the final eight. So, yeah, it's a lot of permutations and calculations and misinformation, BP.
Indeed. Well, of course, Brett Anderson is always here on a Sunday morning from SEN's Inside Footy to break down what has unfolded so far in the round and to look ahead. BA, good morning.
Hey, BP. It's good to be with you.
Great to have you on board. I was covering the Gold Coast and Essendon last night. The Bombers got there. Gee, what about plus 40 inside 50s and about 30 scoring shots? I thought the Gold Coast, though, were a little bit more blue-collar last night. They dug in for the fight, but the Bombers were able to get it done. Footy in Ballarat for the first time. I think probably overwhelming success apart from the result for the Bulldogs. A sea of red, white and blue there yesterday. The Cats sneak home, and the Giants were able to pull away late against the Eagles, who stuck around for a fair bit.
Yeah, they were. It was an interesting day of footy, and I guess it's funny, where do you start? Probably in Ballarat. I think yesterday was, I think it was a great day for footy in general and a great day for the city of Ballarat. Ideally, it would have been good for the Bulldogs if they had found a way to get over the line, but their season's pretty much done now. It's going to be really tough for them, you would have thought, considering where other teams are placed and where they're placed and the percentages that they've got as well. So they were pretty good for a half, for three quarters, but they just didn't do enough then in that third quarter with the wind when there was a really strong breeze going to that right-hand end, BP, as you know. And they just didn't quite use it effectively. And in the end, Port Adelaide really defended smartly. And then those last five goals in the final term, kicking with the wind, it totally took the game away from the Bulldogs and effectively it ended their premiership defence, I would have thought.
BA, Travis Boak finding some form yesterday, and the game breaker, in my opinion, Charlie Dixon's four goals. He was absolutely sensational, busting packs and, you know, giving off handballs that resulted in goals. I just thought he was outstanding.
It was quite funny, Zenith, in terms of the way the game was played and who loomed as being the potential match winner, because Bailey Dale for the Dogs, with his four goals in what was a low-scoring game at that stage, looked like being the trump card. He started on a wing and drifted forward when Stringer went down with his hamstring. So he's a player who's really come along for the Dogs. Yeah. And I'm sure they'd be thrilled with his development. But then in the end, it was the big fella. And he was a colossus, I would have thought, yesterday, Charlie Dixon. And probably paid back every bit of the money that they got him across from Gold Coast for. He was immense. And it wasn't just in the air, was it? Like, he was so strong. And Zane Cordy just didn't know where to position himself when Charlie was flying for the footy, but it was, as you mentioned, it was on the ground as well. And I actually thought he had a really good foiler, a nice little sidekick there in the second half, especially in Todd Marshall. Didn't have massive numbers, but the possessions he had and the movement that he did was really smart. And I think they'd be thrilled with what he showed at AFL level after a bit of a nervy start. A couple of other players too. I thought Hamish Hartlett played his best game in 3 or 4 years yesterday. He was physical. He put his body on the line. He kicked the ball beautifully. And they stood up when he was really needed. And the skipper was pretty good too, in Travis Boak. He's with a slow starter. He started on Rob Murphy and then worked into the game. But I thought his third quarter and his last quarter especially were pretty darn good. So I think Port Adelaide be thrilled with that, because I actually thought the Bulldogs were specials yesterday going into that game. It was the type of game that you didn't expect Port to win, and because the Dogs had so much on the line. In the end, it's Port that sort of makes sure that they're still in the race for a top four finish, and the Dogs, who are pretty much cooked.
Yeah, they're an interesting story, aren't they, Port Adelaide? Their resurgence to get back in the final, certainly they've been criticised for not taking a big scalp in the eight, but gee, they've gone to Shanghai, they've gone to Ballarat, they've come to Melbourne and won. They should beat the Gold Coast next week. What can they do in September? Where do they sort of sit in the mix for you, Brett? Because certainly, if they get it all together with the brand of footy they can play and they get a home final, if they, depending where they certainly finish, they might even play Adelaide potentially in a showdown.
Will, yeah.
The Tigers obviously have got a bit to say about that in the last two rounds. What can they do, Port, for you?
I think it all depends on who they face. And we might see that throughout the final series in terms of who teams end up facing in those early rounds. And I don't think whilst the Crows made a real mess of Port in that last showdown, I don't think they'd really be wanting to face Port Adelaide in a first final at the Adelaide Oval. I think there's probably three or four other options that they'd much prefer to that one. But look, it's hard to see. When they haven't beaten anyone of note throughout the year, it is hard to see them going super deep. But it's all going to depend for me just on where they play teams and whether they can get a favourable draw, because there's probably teams who, if they do get a home final first up in that lower half of the eight, that get in and would actually fancy going over to play Port Adelaide. It wouldn't be as much of a threat maybe as playing a Richmond or someone else at the MCG or even the Bombers at Etihad or something like that. So it's going to be a fascinating one from that point of view.
Brett, I'd just like to take you back to Friday night. An absolute cracking game. The return of Josh Kennedy in sparkling form, the engine room for the Swans, a real barometer. When he's up and about, Sydney invariably win. Rory Sloane, great to see Rory Sloane shaking the tag. He was in scintillating form. But the highlight of the night, the bouncing goal of Lance Buddy Franklin.
It's pretty good, isn't he? I like watching Lance play, and I think 99% of the country does. He's just amazing. What a game, though, the other night. I sort of said the other night I'd be really happy if that was the grand final at the end of the year, in terms of if we can get a game like that again.
Yep.
The Swans at stages looked like they had it, then there were stages that looked like they were gone. But in the end, Bud steps up and Papley stepped up as well. I think he's becoming a really important figure for Sydney with his ability to go up through midfield but then find space inside 50. It's just a cracking game of footy. And the cream rose to the top in the end. And I don't think Adelaide would have lost any friends out of that performance the other night. I think they'd be quite happy with it. There's a couple of blokes who went in slightly underdone. And as you mentioned, Josh Kennedy came back with a real force and was probably the best player on the ground.
Yeah, look, I thought when Sydney got the jump, I mean, they always come out ferocious. So we think back to that prelim last year against Geelong. And gee, for mine, just reading it, I couldn't see Adelaide getting back in. But gee, momentum can shift so quickly, as we know, in modern footy. And I think full credit to the Crows, because I was more watching them on a Friday night, what they were going to deliver. We know what Sydney are going to bring. They've gone to Adelaide and won before. And I agree. I mean, they've probably in the end, what, they were 9 points up. Sydney get two late goals. But, you'd think Adelaide, they're certainly going to finish in the top two, get a couple of finals, the ultimate test to come to the G and win. But just a little bit of harder substance about Adelaide on Friday night that gives you some confidence that they, are going to do some damage in September. Not convinced they can certainly win the premiership. We know it's wide open. It's a very hard season to predict.
It is, absolutely nuts. I guess when we get to round 22 and we can't figure who we think's a certain grand finalist, because you've got some pretty good teams up there in GWS. And also, when you look at Sydney form, as we speak, as well. And you know what? Richmond, on their day, the Tigers are good enough to find a way in there as well. So it's going to be a fascinating final series. But I don't think Adelaide would have lost too many admirers out of that one.
47,000 attended yesterday at the MCG. Wow. Collingwood, the jump. 6-2 first quarter. And you thought, gee, it's the Magpies are on. And Geelong just grounded their way back into it, didn't they? And at the end of the game, enter one Patrick Dangerfield with a magnificent 55-metre goal on the run.
Yeah, it's funny what teams do when they've got a really good record against another side. And she was pretty confident that Collingwood would go really well yesterday. I didn't think they'd win the game, but I thought it would be close. And in the end, it sort of played out that way. They've just got a format and a structure that really worries the Cats. And it's quite funny the way that they set up. And it doesn't matter what personnel they've got, because they had so many good players out of that side yesterday. But they've just got something that they do that really works well against Geelong. And for 60% of the game, it was working quite well. The Cats obviously fought back after that slow start. And in the end, they probably never looked like losing after half time. It was going to be a case of Collingwood have to do something pretty special to regain the lead and win the game. But yeah, certainly the best players stood up when it was required for Geelong, and Dangerfield was the man in that regard. But I thought Mason Cox for Collingwood showed some really good signs again yesterday as that sort of number one ruck being pushed forward. Will Hoskin-Elliott did some nice things. I think Collingwood, when you look at that, it's a funny one from a Nathan Buckley point of view, isn't it? Because their performances in sort of the second half of the year, especially the last sort of 8 weeks, have been so good.
And they have.
You just sort of look at it and think, well, what could they do with all their players on the park? Obviously, no Wells yesterday, no Pendlebury, no DeGoey. The list goes on. So they're a tantalising prospect at times, Collingwood, because you just think, okay, if we can get this right, we can get it really right, and we can become a really, really good side. But just those losses, it becomes, I guess, a difficult one when it comes to, okay, what do we do moving forward? But yeah, they were pretty good again yesterday, Collingwood. I don't think any Collingwood supporter walks away thinking, oh, down to the dumps or dirty about the performance, because you can only tip your hat to it.
Fascinating 10 days coming up, very tight-lipped at the Pies as to what is going to unfold. Round 23, Giants and the Eagles yesterday. Gee, I was up there last year when Natanui scored the goal at the death. No, Nick, but the West Coast were competitive, but the Giants down the stretch, as we know, can outrun teams. Gee, Josh Kelly, I mean, we've sung his praises all year, Brett. I mean, 43 disposals, but put himself in the crunch, bandage up, then delivers on the non-preferred right boot to Big Mummy, who just puts a bit of icing on the cake late in the game, a genuine star.
He is a star, and West Coast didn't realise that because they let him run round for the first half with no one anywhere near him. He had 23, I think, in the first half, and it was just frightening how much room he was given for someone of his quality. Like, you can understand if a player might not hurt you, you can allow them some room, and I guess that argument was had earlier in the year with Tom Mitchell in terms of his disposals, but he's certainly really starting to hurt teams as well. But Josh Kelly just cuts you apart. So the funny thing was, is even though he was having a great day and he was doing a lot of damage, West Coast were right in the game, and in fact, at times, they looked like they were going to win the game. In the end, as you mentioned, that quality, and I think Deledio in that front half and then going through midfield really adds a little bit to them, but just the quality. Jeremy Cameron comes back and he has a few really influential touches. Toby Green's battle with Elliot Yeo was really fascinating. I thought Yeo was one of the best players on the ground for West Coast and didn't do much wrong yet. Toby Green ended up with, I think it was 3 goals. It might have even been 4, but I think it was 3, and some really important ones as well. So it was a good contest. I think West Coast, again, have got a great record against GWS. GWS's record at home, too, is an interesting one, guys. If you have a look at their wins and losses, I think they've now won 7 of their last 13 at home, and then there's a draw in there as well.
Yep.
But aside from 200-point wins or 15-goal wins over pretty ordinary sides, the rest of them, they're all pretty narrow margins, so they're not being able to belt teams or put teams away on their home deck. It's an interesting one moving into September in terms of where they play their finals. I don't think going to Spotless Stadium would hold the fear of other grounds for other teams, and we saw the Dogs go up there in the finals last year, obviously, and knock them over, but just the sheer quality in the end. I thought Aiden Corr, I know that Josh Kennedy kicked 3 goals or 4 goals and he's probably going to win the Coleman medal, but I think Aiden Corr as a player is really growing too, boys, as a defender, and I think he got some special comments made by Leon Cameron post-game in terms of how happy they are with his development. Like, it's taken a while, but he's developing into a nice key defender.
He's a beauty. Geelong Giants going to head down for that one at the Kattery next week. Fantastic minor premiership. Still up for grabs. Who hosts the final, Zenners? That's a great finish to the season.
Oh, it's a compelling finish to the season, no doubt about it. Turn your attention to Essendon and Gold Coast. Essendon getting the job done. Looks like their final's bound, the Bombers.
Yeah, you would think that they're going to get there from now, boys. But how good was Josh Begley's start to his
career? Yes,
yeah. 2 goals in the first quarter. I think he had 2 or 3 more assists.
He set up James Stewart, yep.
He took the AFL footy in that first quarter like a duck to water. He kicked 4 in a JLT game against the Suns up there. I think it was in Cairns, from memory. It might have been in Townsville.
McKay or something?
We played those games. And the Gold Coast boys would be sick of him after that first quarter last night. But he sort of cooled off a little bit. I thought David Zaharakis, again, has had a massive night, and he's probably last month and a half, nearly 2 months, has been outstanding, which is amazing for a guy who's still in contract negotiations as a free agent. They're still a bit apart in terms of the financial value on his contract, from all reports, the Bombers and his management. But I tell you what, he's not doing his next contract any harm in terms of what he's worth, because his form has been outstanding, and he was fantastic again last night. Gold Coast, as you mentioned, though, DP, they were plucky. They had a bit more about them. They were a bit more blue-collar, and it took quite a while for Essendon to get the better of them last night. But in the end, I thought Goddard too was really important, a calming influence, and found plenty of the footy.
Yep.
Quite happy with that to get out of there. I think that loomed as a bit of a, especially with no Michael Hurley, it loomed as a danger game. But to get out of there with a win, potentially locking up a final spot, Bombers will be wrapped.
Just on Zaha Rakis, Brett, 38 possessions, 11 score involvements. Incredible
15
figures.
15 inside 50s.
Yeah, 15 inside 50s.
Yep. He's killing him. And I think the big thing with him, everyone thinks of him as an outside player. He's spending more and more time through the centre square, and his contested numbers have been really good. So his form has been one of the main reasons the Bombers find themselves back, potentially playing in a final series in their first year after what was obviously a horrendous previous few years, especially last year with all the players sitting out.
Brett, quick thoughts today. Your D's at the G up against the Lions. We'll have that live on SEN from midday. 1:10 start. Gee, should be able to deliver. St Kilda North. Interesting game. And the Dockers, well, last game at Domain. Harley Bennell back first game, what, a couple of years. Gee, it's a tough assignment. I'd always go to the West. Fremantle haven't had a great year, but, gee, Richmond want to be on their game today. Maybe a little bit of emotion, particularly with Fremantle last year when they had an ordinary year, Zenners, when they beat the Bulldogs in the last round, Pavlich's last game. Quick thoughts on how those three might pan out?
Yeah, just on the Tigers Freo. Tigers' record at Subi against the Dockers is really good. I think they've won their last three there. So I would think that they go there with no trepidation whatsoever and come home with the points, as a good team should do. North Melbourne, and look, Nick Riewoldt's last home game for the Saints against North Melbourne. You would think that despite their indifferent form, the Saints have still got enough quality to get over North, especially with the emotion riding on Rui's final home salute. And then the Demons, there's a nervous Demons supporter sitting in my house this morning, boys. I tell you what, I don't know what to make of today going to the MCG, but on paper and everything you look at, they should be good enough to get the points against Brisbane. But you know what, that young Brisbane team, if there's Lions supporters out there, Fitzroy supporters, not too sure, get to the MCG today, because your team is going to be good in a couple of years'
That's
time.
Right.
We're going to see them today.
Old Roy Boys fans, we did skip one.
We did, and I just thought I'd put the hand up there for all of our Carlton supporters. The da-da-da-da-da's was ringing around Etihad Stadium last night. 36,000 people attended, and some ghosts put to bed last night, BA.
4,800 and something days since they last beat Hawthorn.
So 12 years,
The last coach to beat Hawthorn was Dennis Pagan at the Blues, so it's been a long, long time. They were fantastic, weren't they? Jumped them early.
Yep.
Looked like at times that Hawthorn were going to overrun them, but continued just to find that next gear. Sam Doherty, Mark Murphy, outstanding, I thought, last night. Tom Mitchell, 44 possessions, 11 clearances, continues on his fine form. And Ryan Burton had another big outing that might eventually decide the NAB Rising Star this year. But I think Carlton supporters will be waking up pretty happy this morning. There's a few messages already floating around. I saw on Facebook walls and social media, Big Ed Olick is certainly not letting Andrew Schmidt in the office, but having an easy morning. He's letting him know all about it.
So. Big Ed. He's all over it. Thank you, Brett.
He's up and about, boys. But the Blues, as they be, up and about today.
Indeed. Brett Anderson from SEN's Inside Footy, part of our footy team, of course, here at Melbourne's home of footy. Melbourne and Brisbane will bring you that today, followed by the Dockers and the Tigers. Updates of St Kilda and North Melbourne. Zenas will slip in a break. Talk some NRL. Good of the mighty Melbourne Storm game.
Oh, just loving it. The demolition job they did on Newcastle. But just quickly, Tom Mitchell, 44 possessions for the Hawks.
Yep.
What a performance.
He's an accumulator, that is for sure. He gets his hands on the footy. 25 past 9, Brett Phillips, Troy Zantuck in for the Ultimate Wrap.
On 11.16 SEN, the Ultimate Wrap with Tony Shebeki.
Shebeki out, Phillips in today. Zantuck is always here. Where's Uncle George out today?
I think George might
in the Maldives,
be holidaying somewhere exotic, Georgie boy.
Somewhere very exotic. We've wrapped up the AFL.
We have just that phone call that we received during the during Brett Anderson's segment. Oh. It may have been Josh Kelly's manager.
I can't divulge.
To tell you to keep pumping up Josh
and
just keep adding those dollar signs to his contract.
Mm. It's something brewing. 28 past 9, let's focus on the NRL.
Yes.
We can't sing the praises enough of the Melbourne Storm. They are a mighty club, 44-12 over Newcastle last night to secure back-to-back minor premierships with two rounds remaining, if you don't mind. Matty Russell, we always hear and listen to on Fox Sports covering the NRL. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Speaking of exotic locations, when it comes to the NRL, Melbourne has to be considered an exotic location because, fantastic yesterday, and let's face it, back-to-back minor premierships, yeah. Not easy. That's a wonderful achievement from Craig Bellamy, Frank Panisi, the rest of the management team down. Absolutely brilliant.
Outstanding. We know Zenas and Matt, you know, the tried and true are always going to get it done. Cam Smith and Billy Slater and co. But gee, young Brodie Croft, his first hat-trick of his career. He's just continuing to shine, this young man.
He went into yesterday with one NRL try, just his fourth game of the season, the fifth of his career. He returns with a hat-trick and two try assists. It was interesting earlier this season when Melbourne beat Newcastle by a very similar scoreline, 40-12. Cooper Cronk had four try assists. So they rested him yesterday, and maybe Newcastle thought, oh, good, Cooper's not there. He put four try assists on us last time. Well, enter Brodie Croft, three tries, two try assists. He's a 20-year-old from southern Queensland. We've seen him show some real poise early this season when he knocked over a field goal to beat North Queensland in spectacular fashion. He speaks well. He looks the goods as a footballer. He's the sort of bloke who, over the next decade, Melbourne can keep him, should do exactly what Cooper Cronk has done over the last decade. And those comparisons are already being made.
Yeah, interesting that you say that, Matty. It's a statement made by Craig Bellamy. He says there are a lot of similarities between them. They're both anal about their preparation. So I think that sums it up beautifully.
Yeah, you know what? And I can tell a story there. When you get to Amy Park and you're there well before kickoff, I'm talking hours before kickoff, it's nothing strange to see Cooper Cronk with a towel draped around him going for a swim or starting the early stages of his preparation on game day. And that's just one day of the week. You know, Cooper does so much above and beyond what most footballers would expect they'd have to do. And if Brodie Croft is following in the same path, then he's certainly on the way to greatness. A long, long way to go. You know, it's probably unfair to draw comparisons between Croft and Cronk so early on. But yesterday, Danny Bedeiras was calling him Brodie Cronk with tongue-in-cheek. Stephen Blocker-Roach wanted to know whether Brodie Croft and Cooper Cronk had ever been seen in the same room together.
Blocker did say that.
And he actually said, I'm sure that he's just done his hair differently and I've trotted Cooper on there because I can't tell them apart. Look, it's tongue-in-cheek. He is so similar and comparisons will be drawn. But at the end of the day, we don't want to put too much pressure on him. We just want to enjoy the career that Brodie Croft is going to have. But you can't help.
Yeah,
you can't.
Well, they've got a good nickname for him already, Mini Cooper.
I like it.
You like that?
I like that one.
In the vault.
I like that one.
Matty, I mean, look, they've secured the minor premiership. We know that finals are a different kettle of fish, but how do they stack up this year to their other great years, the Melbourne Storm?
Maybe better than ever. Maybe better than ever. And I don't say that lightly because let's look at their road record this season. Just the one defeat that was in Adelaide. Their previous best road season was where they dropped three games. So they've finished their away regular season. Now they'll have their final two games at Amy Park, meaning they only lost one game on the road. Their best ever away season. And yesterday, as I'm calling this game, I have to call a lot of Melbourne this season, but it is no way the big three. And it's unfair to refer to Melbourne that way these days. You're calling the game and you see Jordan McLean, you see Nelson Asifa-Solomona, you see Jesse Bromwich, Dale Finucane, and there's Will Chambers. You've got these fantastic wingers. I could go on and on.
Vunivalu.
Exactly. Vunivalu Adokar. It is a complete team. And as I'm calling, I'm thinking to myself, how the hell is any other team going to beat this lineup? You know, barring injuries, barring sort of some sort of cataclysmic happening, how is anyone going to beat Melbourne? Oh. I don't know. I would say maybe they're better placed than ever to win the premiership.
And to throw in the man, Matt, and Asifa-Solomona, that try at the end of the game there, Matty, was quite incredible.
Something to behold, wasn't
it?
Not the fact that he seemed to jump from about 10 metres out to land at the end goal. It was that he stood up, ran past, and accelerated away from Dane Gagai.
Yes.
He was a speedster. Yeah. In the fullback role for Newcastle. So capable on his feet, yet it looked like he had concrete boots on as Nelson Asifa-Solomona went past him. He's a leap year baby, Nelson. So he's 21 years of age. I said in commentary, he's actually only five, so he's the biggest 5-year-old in the world. And he's just one ingredient in this wonderful football team. And the last two games at Amy Park should be a celebration of their season.
Yep.
And let's face it, if they get to the grand final, Craig Bellamy will hate this talk because there's so much work to be done between now and then. But if they get to the grand final, we talk about the fairy tales that have unfolded in the last few years. I would say it'll be a fairy tale for Cooper Cronk, Cam Smith and Billy Slater to play their last game together. Grand final. So there's a big carrot for them, given that Cooper's leaving the Storm at the end of the season. And Billy Slater, should God forbid they lose in week one of the finals and be made to play in all four weekends, the grand final might just be game 300 for Billy. Otherwise, if they get there, it'll be 299.
Hopefully it all just goes to script. Cronulla 26-16 over the Cowboys. Might miss the finals for the first time in a bit. Roosters 22-8 over the Tigers. Brisbane too good for the Dragons 24-12. Rabbitohs 36-18 over the Warriors. Parramatta continuing the ordinary year. Scrutiny continuing to surround Neil Henry at the Titans and what's going on there. Raiders and Panthers to play today. Bulldogs and the Sea Eagles. Exciting finish. Stormer on top. We're happy about that down south, Matty. Look forward to watching your work on Fox Sports.
Thanks, gentlemen. Yes, with the Cowboys faltering badly amid an injury crisis, today's game, Canberra against Penrith, you see at Fox League at 2 p.m. Eastern. That is a huge game for the Canberra Raiders. Win that, they are really in this playoff picture again. So it's a great race to the finals. Anytime, gents, great to talk.
Matty Russell from Fox Sports will slip in a break and talk some tennis on the other side. Mark Sifoulis.
Oh, hello.
Nick Kyrgios on court at the moment. Just started his semi-final in Cincinnati against David Ferrer. We'll update you on that next here on The Ultimate Wrap.
On 11.16 SEN, The Ultimate Wrap with Tony Shebeki.
Welcome back at 22-10. Brett Phillips in for the Shebekster this morning alongside Troy Zantuck. You know one thing I noticed overnight, Zantuck?
What's that, BP?
England and the West Indies. Oh, demolition job, winning the first test by an innings and 209 runs. Stuart Broad, the time passes so quickly. Going past the great Beefy Botham as England's second highest wicket taker.
Yes.
So he's on 384 with figures of 3 for 34 in the second dig. We know Jimmy Anderson has taken 492 test wickets when he's 35. That actually surprised me looking at that stat. I mean, he's been a very decent bowler for England at 492 wickets.
I'm sure that'd surprise a lot of people, BP, but the longevity of those two has been quite incredible. You know, Broad's had his injury worries over the journey, and to think that he now sits second, it's quite extraordinary.
I suppose the disappointing part about that is there is just no sign at all that the West Indies are ever going to get back to being a competitive test cricket nation. It might never happen.
No, which is a shame because obviously we grew up in that 70s, 80s and early 90s period where they dominated the world and were just a ticket to watch a West Indies Australia game back then. It was like a Willy Wonka's golden ticket. Yes. It was just, it was wall-to-wall excitement.
Yep.
And, you know, the personalities back then, you know, Viv Richards, Clive Lloyd,
yep,
Gordon Greenidge, Desi Haynes.
I mean, they're still competitive, obviously.
Jeff Dujon.
T20 level, one day level, but gee, they get obliterated in test cricket in the longer form of the game. Let's talk some tennis with Mark Sifoulis, great member of the Ultimate Wrap, also does some work with me on the first serve on a Sunday night. We're back from 10 o'clock tonight. Morning to you, Mark.
Morning, BP and Zanners. How you going, boys?
Good, Mark. To talk to you. Nick Kyrgios is live on court at the moment. Gee, it's a big week, isn't it? I mean, he's best effort certainly in a Masters 1000 event. He's up against the road runner, tough nut to crack in David Ferrer, and three games all in the opening set.
Yeah, we all know what Kyrgios is capable of when he's on his game and when his head's in it. So, three all first set, and just keep an eye on the stats, and he's won 9 of 9. First serve points, so he's not really losing a point on his first serve, which is his biggest weapon. So obviously he really started well. David Ferrer is also serving pretty well, so it's going to be a hard one to crack. David Ferrer won't give him too much, but Nick's just got to stay pretty solid over the next couple of games and hopefully he can get into a tie break where I think he might be able to take in the breaker.
Mark, the 6-2-7-5 victory over the great Rafael Nadal, that must imbue Kyrgios with enormous confidence going further.
Yeah, it absolutely would. I mean, Nick's an interesting character. He came out in the presser and he said that when he plays on a backcourt, he's not really motivated to play, but you put him on a show court and he's ready to roll. And I think it's pretty interesting from a mindset perspective for a player to think like that. But, you know, against Rafael Nadal, I mean, he's got the game to beat anyone in the world, and we all know that. And that's probably the frustrating thing from a tennis fan perspective is that we all know what Nick's capable of, but he's just not producing it on a consistent level. So, look, I mean, what a great win it was for him. But let's hope he can keep it consistent throughout the rest of this week and obviously into the rest of the year. And we are going to need him come Davis Cup time. So hopefully he can sustain his confidence leading up to Davis Cup as well.
Yeah, just got to keep the body in, Nick. I mean, that is massive. Semi-final away to Belgium in about a month's time. If we win, we host it here in Melbourne, which would be outstanding. And Nick Kyrgios needs to be right. I mean, look, he's going to do it his own way, isn't he, Mark? I've changed my view over the journey. And it is fascinating to watch. We've got his good mate on the first serve tonight, who's been a little bit of a journeyman, Matt Reed, on the ATP World Tour, but he's playing a big role now, Reed, helping our Davis Cup team as a hitting partner, and he does travel with Nick as well as, I suppose, certainly a hitting partner because he can play tennis very well, but also as a confidant on the road and someone close to him, obviously, while he's away from home. So that should be a fascinating chat after 10 tonight, but he's going to do it his own way, isn't he, Mark? And you think, God, the sky's the limit. If he could get himself superbly conditioned to play this game and mentally tuned in whatever court he's on, I mean, he could have absolute dominance.
Yeah, that's the scary part about it, isn't it? If he gets his head right, we've got a superstar in our hands. And look, he already is an absolute gun of the game. Like, I love watching him play, and I think everyone tunes in just to see what's going to happen because he's so unpredictable, with his attitude and the way he goes about it. So, he's got the game to be number one in the world. There is no doubt whatsoever. But the game also includes the mindset. So if that doesn't come with him, then, we're going to have the inconsistency that we've been seeing of late. So, look, I mean, let's see what happens over this week. But he's early 20s, and he's nearly top 20 in the world. So I think we're asking a lot of a young kid. But let's hope he settles right in and keeps doing what he's doing this week because it's phenomenal to watch and great for Australian tennis.
So winner of this will play Grigor Dimitrov. Gee, good win against Isner. Tough to break, no surprise. Two tiebreakers, 12-10 in the second set tiebreaker. And disappointing week, Grigor, last week in Montreal, lost to Robin Haase, who went on to make the semi-finals as the unseeded player. But, gee, Dimitrov, who'd also, like Kyrgios, be in his first Masters 1000 final.
Yeah, Grigor's such a good player. I mean, he's one of those players that we're just waiting for something to happen with him and waiting for him to maybe make that Grand Slam final where we all know he's capable of doing that. He's got the game. He's the junior Federer, as everyone calls him, and has the same style, same game, all-round, all-court player. A really good result for Grigor this week. Obviously, cracking Isner last night or this morning, our time, 7-6, 7-6, and really is hard to beat John Isner on a faster surface. And Grigor did that, and he faces the winner of Kyrgios and Ferrer, which, hopefully Nick gets over the line. It'll be a great final to watch.
And great news through the week with Ash Barty, a career-defining victory over Venus Williams.
Yeah, we spoke about it last week on the show, Zanners, and, but Ash Barty's been such a great competitor this year, and getting now inside the top 50 in the world for the first time. She beats Venus Williams this week. Unfortunately, lost to Caroline Wozniacki in the next round. But wow, what a fantastic couple of weeks it has been for Ash Barty, who qualified for this event and gets through to the third round, which is a really good effort from her. I think there's big things to come with her in the next couple of months, couple of years, and she's obviously matured a lot when she took some time out of the game, and now we're starting to see the rewards of that.
And the final of the women, of course, in Cincinnati, it'll be Garbiñe Muguruza, the Wimbledon champion. Great victory against Pliskova today, the world number one. She was 0-6 coming in, 6-3, 6-2, to play Simona Halep, who defeated Sloane Stephens comprehensively. Mark Stephens says, we heard it's a great part about the coach has been able to come out on court on the WTA Tour. She just said to her coach, I haven't got any legs today. Her feet weren't moving at all. 6-2, 6-1, Halep. Well, needs to win, doesn't she now? I was looking at the points before. She'll need to win to be officially crowned the world number one.
Yeah, Simona Halep's such an interesting player. Like, she gets to so many semis and so many finals and obviously hasn't got the ability at the moment or the mental capacity to be able to really capitalise on those efforts. But, if she does win this and gets to number one in the world, she's a workhorse and she deserves everything she gets. So, she's one of those players that probably needs that little bit of confidence, and that one win might get her over the line to be able to beat these mental demons on a regular basis. But, she's such a super competitor, Simona Halep. Doesn't have the weapons that all the other players possess, but her weapon is her movement and her consistency and the ability to just run down every single ball and make you play. So Yeah, women's tennis, you can toss the coin every time the girls go on court because you never know what's going to happen out there. And it's very hard to pick winners these days.
Yeah, unpredictable, Sanders. And great news this morning, Rafael Nadal confirmed he is returning to Brisbane for the Brisbane International. Back for a second year, and he might have the number one ranking. That mightn't be totally in the bag by then. Stoes are out of the US Open, which is disappointing for her having won it, but that hand is just still giving her a fair bit of trouble. And the Aussie girls are playing a playoff for the wild card spot into the US Open. So Cabrera and Rogoska, Destiny Iava, this young Victorian girl, 16, up against Arina Rodionova. So we'll update that on the first serve later on tonight. That's certainly a big prize. Good on you, Mark. Good to talk some tennis on a Sunday morning.
Cheers, guys. Have a good morning.
Thanks, Mark.
Mark Sefoulis. Yeah, tennis tonight, 10 o'clock first serve. We'll have Matt Reed. He's inside the Kyrgios camp. Mark Hilawaddy, who's one of the great coaches in Australian tennis. He's been in China the last 6 months. He's going to take us inside some fascinating stories.
Yes.
And Nicole Pratt, the head of women's tennis in Australia, will join us live from that playoff in New Haven later on tonight.
Yeah, so two good stories over the last fortnight to BP. Ash Barty, her form continues, and Nick Kyrgios. If Nick Kyrgios happens to get over Ferrer, and then Dimitrov could be a career high ranking of
indeed.
12.
Yep.
So
on serve at the moment, 4-3 Ferrer in that opening set. He's could cap off an amazing week. This is when you want to play well, when there's big rankings points on the line at the Masters 1000.
Sheep stations.
A team that's going alright is the All Blacks.
They go okay.
Been a bit going on off the pitch as well this week, but demolished the Wallabies last night. We'll talk to Sean Maloney and Brian Martin to talk about Winks. Just a little slow out of the blocks.
It'll be interesting to see what BM is taking.
12 to 10, the ultimate wrap.
On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
At 10 to 10, Brett Phillips in for Tony Shebeki this morning, and that is the signature tune. Troy Zantuck, take it away with a bit of Glory Days.
Thanks, BP. Round 22 bagfuls. Well, it wasn't Hawthorn's night last night, but it's a bit of a tribute for the Hawkers today. Peter Hudson kicked 11 goals, 2 against the Roy Boys back in 1970. But this stat will blow you away, BP. Jason Dunstall, round 22. Kick 5 bags of 10 goals in round 22. In round 22. So he kicked 10 straight against the Shinboners in 1988, 11-5 against the Saints in 1989, 12-6 against the Tigers. He loved playing against the Tigers in 1992, 10-3 against the Bears in 1993, and 10-3 again against Melbourne in the very famous game in 1996.
Yep.
So for all the Hawks supporters feeling a bit down today, Glory Days round 22 with Hutto and Dunstall. Back to you, BP.
Beautifully done. Always good to reflect on the Glory Days, which we do quite a bit. Hey, in the world of basketball, the Boomers through to the final of the Asia Cup in Lebanon, defeating the Tall Blacks from New Zealand overnight. The commentator's line last night, the Boomers soared like an arse on fire. That's what he said in the live commentary. And they'll play Iran. They'll play Iran in the decider.
That's a quotable quote.
Southampton winning their first game in the EPL last night for the season, 3-2 over the Hammers. Man U going beautifully, second straight win. 8 goals for the season, 4-0 against Swansea. Watford won, so did West Brom over Burnley. Leicester too good for Brighton Hove Albion. Liverpool 1-0 over Crystal Palace, and Stoke 1-0 over Arsenal. Let's talk some rugby union. The All Blacks, Wallabies, Bledisloe Cup. We know the deal. Gee, it's been a while since the Aussies have prevailed, and that will continue for a little longer. 40 first half points from the All Blacks, setting up the win last night in Sydney. Sean Maloney from Fox Sports Rugby joins us. Morning, Sean.
Hello, mate. We talk about Glory Days. I just can't remember them anymore. They're gone. They're gone. I'm so despondent this morning. It was horrible last night. We trailed 54-6 at one point, man. 54-6.
It's
I don't know where to start. I really don't.
John Eels is preparing for a comeback, I hear.
I reckon Eelsy, the three of us, It would take nearly every single Australian who could strap in a pair of boots to do so, to get past those Men in Black at the moment. They were phenomenal last night. They hammered us. Every single mistake we made cost us 7 points, and then some of the defence heaped on top of that just made it absolute carnage. Absolute carnage.
Did they take the foot off the pedal? Do you think in the last half an hour, the All Blacks, Australia scored 4 tries in that final half an hour to give a semblance of respectability to the scoreline?
Yeah, no, I don't think they did. I don't think they did, because if they could have, they would have put 70 or 80 on us. That's how ruthless they are. So I think it was more a case of our guys finally starting to hit their groove. Now, there were so many things that led to last night's calamity, and the first and foremost one was that, you know, for the last 4 weeks, Michael Checker, the coaches, had the guys together because Super Rugby fell apart so quickly for the Aussie sides this year. But instead of working on game plans, refining their skills, that kind of thing, they've been getting flogged, they've been getting fit mid-season because they came into that June series out of condition. So it's all that combined has just led us to this place where we're talking about a night of one of the darkest nights for Australian rugby.
Kirtley Beale, first test for all. What about a year, Sean? Scored a try last night. How did you see his return?
He had some nice touches. I didn't like the way that where he was defended last night, though. They sort of tried to keep him out of the traffic in defence. I don't know why that happened, and that ended up costing us a few tries as well. So his touches were good that he had, and you know, if he can continue on that way, and some others can sort of start coming up to his level, then maybe we can get within a couple more this coming week over in Dunedin. It does not get any easier.
It doesn't. Gee, been an interesting week as well. I mean, there's a bit going on with the All Blacks, isn't there, with a couple of sex scandals going on. In fact, the most dominant sporting team in the world, but idolised also for their culture, based on the motto, better people make better All Blacks. And we know they're idolised in New Zealand, so there's a bit going on. But, gee, on the field, they have been just an unbelievable team, the most dominant sporting team for a long, long time. Depressing for us, but we've got to find a way somehow, Michael Checker and his lieutenants. Good on you, Sean. Hopefully it can turn around someday.
Fingers crossed, fellas. Fingers crossed.
Sean Maloney there from Fox yes. Sports Rugby.
David Campese's just called in. He may be following the lead of John Eales.
Everyone's
making a comeback.
Everyone's putting their hand up. Well, we thought we'd round off the morning, Zenners, talking about the great performance of Winx Wheel Sport with Black Caviar. Gee, Winx had to work pretty hard, winning her 18th straight victory at the Warwick Stakes at Royal Randwick yesterday. No better man to talk to, SEN racing expert Brian Martin. Morning, BM.
Morning, boys. How are you going?
Going well. Look, I was so focused on footy yesterday, and watching back that race, slow out of the blocks and just kept coming, got around the outside and just got over the line.
Yeah, look, extraordinary performance. She's breathtaking, what she's done in the last two Cox Plates in the spring and October down here. It's always been the pinnacle of her campaign to win the Cox Plate, and she's got two on the board, and she's trying to sort of match what Kingston Town did 35 years ago. He won 3 straight, 1980, 81 and 82. It's never been done since Kingston Town. It's never been done before. But, you know, you guys, you know all about athletics and you know, what it's all about from A to B. Who's the fastest from A to B, whether it be Usain Bolt or the champion swimmers or whatever. Her sectional times, considering she, you know, she won the start about four, and she's had the tendency to sort of be a little bit slow out of the blocks, but she missed it by a good 4 lengths. And the key to it was that Huey Bowman didn't panic. You know, a lot of jockeys would sort of start hunting the daylights out of them to chase the field and catch them, you know, which is in the emotion of it all and the rawness of it all, that's what you'd be doing. But he just let her get into a rhythm, let her get balanced. And even at the halfway mark, if you've been watching this horse like I have throughout her career, I thought even at the halfway mark, she'd win. She'd beat those because she wasn't under any pressure. And coming to the turn, she probably gave them, you know, 5 to 6 lengths, but just got down the outside, but reeled off sectionals. Like, her 1,000 metres was 55.18. She broke 44 for the last 800. 31.98 for the last 600 and home the last 400 and 21.06. You compare that to Black Caviar in the Lightning Stakes record-breaking race 2012. Black Caviar off the stand start for the 1,000 ran 55.53. This mare was in full flight of the 1,000 running 55.18. But there's a very compatible last 600 metres, 31.82 for Black Caviar and the Lightning, 31.98 for this mare yesterday. So there's only a breath between the two of them. And her optimum distance is not 1,400, it's 16 to 2,000, which is the cross plate. So it was just extraordinary.
And, of course, Hartnell doing a beautiful job at Caulfield yesterday. Time is on the fly here, Brian, but, gee, it does set up for a great spring, which will be on us, upon us very, very soon after the footy season. Winks saluting for an 18th time yesterday. Really appreciate you joining us.
Good on you, mate.
Brian Martin Zenners.
Yeah, I think the key there was that BM said that Huey Bowman didn't panic. Yep. And, wow, there's ice running through his veins because there were hearts in mouths all around Australia.
Just timed it to perfection. Good to spend a Sunday morning with you.
Great to catch up with you, BP. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Finally, Adam Cooney coming up next with Inside Footy to wrap up what has happened so far. We're off to the G for Melbourne and Brisbane. We're off to Domain, of course, for Frio and Richmond. So a huge day. I'll be back with a bit of tennis tonight. The first serve from 10 o'clock.